Free City Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Stefan Christoph. It is Tuesday, the 11th of May, and I'm here in Montreal sharing a new weekly podcast with you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for subscribing to Free City Radio. We come out every Tuesday, and it's an effort of love, so please share the word about our podcast. Thank you so much. Today on the show, we are going to be hearing from Kanahus Manuel. Kanahus is an indigenous land rights activist, a healer, a community builder, has been involved in indigenous struggles for many years, was one of the founding forces of the Native Youth Movement, and led many campaigns for land rights of indigenous people. Recently, well, actually in the last few years, Kanahus has led a project called Tiny House Warriors. And so basically, these are efforts to assert sovereignty over land that is claimed by the Crown, as it's called in Canada, illustrating the colonial nature of land designations. So Kanahus has been protesting and holding down this project with others, Tiny House Warriors, to try to stop the Trans Mountain pipeline expansion. This is basically a project that's trying to bring materials from the tar sands region in Alberta into territories on the coast. I think it should be noted that this pipeline project was actually purchased by public funds in Canada, the Canadian government, under Justin Trudeau as a Liberal Prime Minister, actually purchased the construction process of this pipeline. Most economists have illustrated that it will make no money, but most importantly, in terms of our discussion today and more generally, this pipeline is being built without the collective support of the Indigenous people whose lands are being impacted by the pipeline. So I spoke with Kanahus about Tiny House Warriors, about the opposition to the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and generally just how she's doing, what's going on. And here's our conversation on Free City Radio.
So thanks for taking the time to be here, Kanahus. I guess first to start, when we are thinking about the pandemic and its impacts, there is some mainstream discussion around the ways that the pandemic has disproportionately impacted Indigenous people, communities, also other communities that have experienced systemic marginalization. But one point of focus that I haven't really seen in the mainstream media is thinking about how the pandemic is related to systems and specifically, you know, sort of an analysis about health and the detrimental impacts on health of colonial capitalism. Now, I know this is so such a focus of your work. So in thinking about where we're at, it's May 2021, what are some reflections that you have to think critically about of how we got here?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me here and giving some of my insight and thoughts on to the subject. I would first like to say that ever since the COVID-19 pandemic, I've been here at the Tiny House Warriors on the front line. I haven't been anywhere else. Actually, around three years ago, I committed to being frontline fighting this pipeline. And so I've been here and I've been seeing everything from a frontline view, being here with fighting against a major industry, a tar sands pipeline that's threatening to come through our territory, where COVID-19 has never even impacted that, hasn't slowed it down whatsoever. We've seen industry even increase during the COVID-19 pandemic with heavy machinery on the highways, pipelines on the highways, mega loads on the freeways and highways, more so than when there was no pandemic. So they had free rein, and the government and the crown, the colonials, will deem what they say is essential work. And so we'll see essential work like that continuing, industry, mining, BC Hydro, Site C Dam. A lot of these big, huge mega projects like the tar sands pipelines and the Site C have been condemned by UN, you know, human rights bodies that said, no, you must halt construction of these mega projects due to human rights violations, Indigenous rights violations. For us, me and my family, we've always been about health. We've been about going back to the land, defending the land, because by defending the land, we're defending our own pharmacy. You know, that's our own pharmacy, is out there in the mountains, is our, you know, our barks and our roots and our mushrooms and our lichens and our, you know, plant medicines. All of those are our pharmacy and what we've been defending this whole time. When we're defending our mountains, they say our mountains are our most powerful medicine people. Our trees in the mountains are the most powerful medicine men. And that's the mindset that we have this whole time this pandemic has happened, is to just continue to promote a healthy wellness, eating, and also for our people with just the mental health, you know, the mental health of just being isolated, especially we're already isolated in a lot of these isolated remote Indian reservations and reserve communities. Mm-hmm. And then we're even further isolated, but they were still allowing industry through these reservation roads during the height of COVID-19 when we were restricted to even leave.
Yeah.
Industry was still allowed to come into these remote Indigenous communities. And that's where I start hearing word from all of our relatives from Northern Manitoba, Northern Alberta that are contacting me saying, hey, what do we do? Mm-hmm. You know, some of the remote communities is where the church still runs and has still a lot of control on the people, mm-hmm. you know, where the church is going in still to this day in these remote Indigenous communities and forcing vaccinations on our people. You know, so, you know, I could talk about a lot of, a lot of things, but I like, there's so much people in our communities right now that are so undecided about the vaccines because they don't trust it. You know, I was just traveling in Chicago, Minneapolis with the Black community. They definitely don't trust the vaccines either. Mm-hmm. You know, and how are we supposed to trust this? You know, and then there's people, our own people in the healthcare field that are promoting vaccines, you know? So it's just, you know, I want people to feel safe, whatever decision that they're making, because, you know, the enemy is going to continue to, you know, kill us no matter what, industry or just forcing foods down our throat. Like one of the things during the COVID-19 pandemic is that everyone continued to eat processed foods. They kept the stores open.
Yeah.
You know, continue to eat unhealthy foods. And we all know that that's one of the biggest killers, one of the biggest killers of our immune system and our health is just the foods that we eat in our diet.
Well, that points to your relationship to the land that Tiny House Warriors has been fighting for. And I mean, of course, it's not only the Tiny House Warriors project, but it's projects over many years that, you know, you illustrated that commitment to connecting to the land on the basis of sovereignty, but also related to health. I think that maybe people haven't really understood because it hasn't been in the headlines like before the pandemic, the fact that the Trans Mountain pipeline and also the Trans Mountain pipeline and of course the Coastal GasLink pipeline, which is north of you, but have continued construction. So if you could maybe just address that a bit, because it's dropped off the headlines, you know, last spring. So what has that meant for Tiny House Warriors and your territory?
Well, right now, and during the height of COVID-19, I think that I want to talk about that, because specifically where we're located right now, where we taken back land, we're occupying an area that the Crown will consider so-called Crown land. It's unceded Sequatmoc territory. But we've been here for 3 years and we're stopping a man camp. This man camp was to house 1,000 men. And for whatever reason, for our occupation here and our direct action here, plus COVID-19, this man camp has not been built. They wanted this to be in fully operation by now, 1,000 men working just right here.
And that was
right,
for
right TMX, here where I am.
TMX yeah, right. pipeline?
Yeah, this is the TMX pipeline. So, okay. So since then, they're still brought in just as much men. There's just as much pipeline workers right now. I know Coastal GasLink is dealing with issues around the workers continuing to, you know, come in during COVID-19. They actually have man camps there that they have been able to build, the Coastal GasLink, and there's actual man camps in existence here, both north and south of me, where I'm at right now. And so those were already proposed and planned, and they have them, not into full capacity that they said they would, but the government actually offered other option for these man camp workers because they don't have this man camp facility here. So they were asking other BC residents to offer their homes or places for these men to come in and stay. And there was a form online for people to fill out if their homes were available for these man camp workers. And we have a big campaign that's really exposing the truth around the man camps and how it just increases the sexual violence against Indigenous women, all women and girls. But we know that Indigenous women and girls, we are the most targeted. And we've been fighting man camps this whole time. So we saw an increase of these men come in. We know that there is the man camps both north and south of us that had COVID outbreaks, and Coastal GasLink, they had COVID outbreaks as well. And we're from little communities. We don't even have the capacity to deal with our own outbreaks if they were to happen, let alone 1,000 or 2,000 men that are coming into our communities from elsewhere. A lot of these men are transient men, you know, workers, they're coming in. They don't have no accountability to our communities. And we're already seeing it. We're already seeing the violence against our women. Our women aren't feeling safe. If you go on Yellowhead Highway right now, from Kamloops all the way to the Highway 16 junction to Edmonton, you're going to see nonstop workers, pipeline workers, trucks, construction men. They say with every 5 truck increase into your area, you're going to have a rape. So they're having numbers now that are saying, okay, 5 new industry trucks in your area are going to, or you're going to have threats of a rape, which is like, you know, you fit five men into one vehicle or four men, that's like 20 men. So out of every 20 men, there's going to be one rape of a woman. Like, no, that's not safe. That's not safe to have in our, even in humanity, you know, now in 2021. And this is the threats that we're facing. You know, yesterday was a day to actually bring attention to the murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit and trans here in Canada and the US and the world. It was yesterday. And everybody woke up to Instagram deleting every single post that they made about murdered and missing Indigenous women, Two-Spirit, trans. Like, why? We can't even expose the truth about what's happening to us as Indigenous people here. And, you know, we as the healers of our nation, the medicine people, and, you know, we're the ones that people depend on. Mm-hmm. People look at us for a resource. Like, what are we going to do? What happens if I do get COVID-19? Or even when people did, people are contacting us firsthand. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just frontline land defenders. Mm-hmm. We're frontline healers. We're frontline in knowing about the medicines, or even where to go harvest the medicines, mm-hmm. because we're actually out there on a territory.
Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, they did a text about the ways that the pipeline workers in Wet'suwet'en territory had brought COVID to the community. I was reading some texts from that organization and other physician groups that were trying to sound alarm. And I know that also an open letter was written by Wet'suwet'en matriarchs to sound the alarm on a lot of the issues that you're raising. And it was sent to the chief health minister in BC. I believe that's the title in British Columbia, Bonnie Henry, about these issues. And I understand there was no response. Could you comment on that? And I guess it's not surprising, but I'm mentioning this just because that particular figure in British Columbia was so sort of celebrated in the liberal media, but there was silence on this issue.
Yeah, I don't have no faith in the BC health system or this Bonnie Henry that, you know, been giving the reports about the COVID-19. They didn't make no response to the Wet'suwet'en matriarchs, you know, the land defenders, the ones that are standing up for the women and for the land. And it was very clear. It made, you know, a lot of news headlines here in BC, but there was no response. And they know, you know, the women of the nation know the best in the health for our nation. And we're talking about little, small, remote communities. We're talking about these reserves that don't have any type of, you know, health centers in them or any type of, you know, medical, you know, help. And so a lot of the people have to go elsewhere, fly to other communities. Like, I even know as a birth worker, when there's people giving birth out there, they have to go to Smithers. They have to go to other places where there's a hospital or there's midwives willing to deliver a baby. Same thing when there's any health issues, major health issues, they have to go elsewhere. And so that's the big thing. And our housing issue, the housing issue in our native communities, you know, we're overcrowded. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, 45% of our community actually has to leave the reservation just because of the housing crisis in our reserve. So we're overcrowded. And I think that's the issue that we saw in like Navajo country and different other native territories where they saw a big influx or the big, huge impacts that this COVID took a lot of lives in those reserves. And they attributed a lot of that to overcrowding and just, you know, communities that still don't have running water. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our native communities that still have on boil water advisories where, you know, we're trying to have the sanitation, but we don't even have like running water. Well, here we know we don't have running water, but we have the best running water, which is the creek and the river running straight from
right
the glaciers.
On.
It's like the cleanest water we can get and to stay clean and, you know, hygiene and everything. And we know that as Native people, we're some of the most cleanest people out there. We taught people how to bathe You know, we taught people how to sweat lodge. We taught people how to steam in medicine and baths and everything. All those still those things we still do today. And that's what a lot of the things that kept us alive through the pandemics, you know, all the ones that came before this, our elders still have that knowledge that said, oh, no, well, this is how we stayed healthy. This is how we sweat. This is how we, you know, did everything. This is how we what we cleaned our everything we touched with was like a we boiled tea that was very antiseptic and we cleaned it. We breathed it in our house every day. We had it boiling. And so it was just that every day a part of who we are and our lives was all preventative. Our medicines were preventative. It was built in our DNA that made us so strong and healthy. And I think that's the wake-up call that COVID-19, you know, has given to us again as Indigenous people is to get on your herbs, get on your teas, you know, your medicine baths, your sweat lodge, your everything that we've learned to be strong is what it's waking us up to do again. And you know, there's so much herbs and teas that we drink on a daily basis that actually help us build our immune system. You know, we need to stay on this.
On the issue of the medical systems and colonialism in Montreal, just I was thinking about that in relation to what you were mentioning about lack of access to hospitals. You know, one of the issues that Resilience Montreal and the Native Women shelters has been dealing with in the pandemic is so many people coming from the north. I mean, this is pre-pandemic, you know, of course, but coming to the city for medical support. And really, there's no infrastructure within the colonial frameworks for people who've come for operations or various, you know, medical needs, real medical needs, and arrive in the city. And, you know, these really quite modest community organizations like Resilience Montreal, Nakuset, who's organizing there, and many others, sort of trying to hold up these people throughout the pandemic, you know. And I know in Vancouver, I'm not as familiar, but there's a similar dynamic that happens around Hastings and Maine and people coming into the city. So in relation to that, I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about the vision of Tiny House Warriors and Back to the Land, and you know, I know that, you know, there's sort of other projects that mirror what you're doing, like Frida Houston's healing center, for example. If you could talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, Tiny House Warriors is not just about land back, and it's not just about fighting a pipeline. Tiny House Warriors, because that's more, we're more than just Tiny House Warriors. We're Suquamish mothers and we're land defenders. And we have a lot of dreams. And one of the dreams, by even just alternative housing and going and start building these tiny houses on wheels, was so we could be mobile. So we could be mobile out on our territory, because we know we have to be out there to be able to witness what is happening, to be able to continue to connect to the land. And like, as the government and the crown says, you don't use it. If you don't use it, you lose it. You know, we actually have to be there using our land, living on our land, asserting our title to our land. And that's in every which way. That's self-determination. That's in our healthcare. That's in our food. That's in our housing. That's in our education system. That's in our birth work. That's in our language work that we do, in our cultural restoration work. That's all connected in this. And so Tiny House Warriors isn't just about stopping a pipeline. We're building the capacity. We're building the education. We're building the youth movement that sparked out of Tiny House Warriors as well. Like you mentioned, Native Youth Movement.
Yeah.
That's how we started really organizing. And it was all about decolonization at that time. It was all about, how do we decolonize, leave the cities, go back to the land, and revive and restore what we had and who we are. And I've been continuing to do that work since Native Youth Movement. And even to this day, you know, we do need alternative medical healthcare and hospitals, institutions, or whatever you want to call it, for our people. Because first of all, I don't think our people are being treated fairly in the hospitals in this medical system. I think we need more advocating in the hospital system so we can get the best, more fair treatment in the hospital, whether it's birth or COVID-19 or anything. We need advocacy in that system, because we aren't being treated fairly. I know as a birth worker, because I go and attend births in hospitals sometimes, and I see how it's so unfair, why Indigenous women have the highest C-section rates in the hospitals in Canada is because I see how they're treated in these hospital systems. So yeah, we do need our own hospital and healthcare. And you know, mm-hmm. we look at places like Una Stoughton and Frida Hewson and their whole vision and dream to build up this healthcare or this healing center that actually is a reality now. There's actually yeah. people there that are healing and getting, you know, I would say the best healing and that you can, because you can't really do it in those other type of institutions where it's like, even like these walls, you know, our institutions are out on the land where we're going to able to connect to it. And, you know, like our mental health, the mental health of our people, like, mm-hmm. you know, better than sending people to psychiatric treatment is to actually go onto the land to spend 2 hours out on the territory or mm-hmm. in the trees or in the wetlands mm-hmm. or in the desert or wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And just 2 hours just to connect to the nature, to the sounds, to the breathing in the air, and just 2 hours for yourself to clear your mind for that meditation. Those are the type of healing programs mm-hmm. that are really going to help our people, mm-hmm. Especially people in the urban setting where we don't get to take that 2 hours for ourselves ever to go out and do that. And that is going to reflect back on our own physical health, you know, our yeah. emotional health, our spiritual health, our physical health, and start thinking again, you know, holistically. Like, we all know the medicine wheel, and we could all sort of see, like, okay, our physical, our mental, our emotional, our spiritual, and how could that be more balanced in our life? And even just that reflecting on that is going to help us, I feel, you know, just do I need to put more effort into my spiritual?